of interpretation. Okay, can Ajahn Pasano teach us how Ajahn Chah teaches or gives techniques on the meditations on physical state, mind, and mind states, and so that. No, Ajahn Chah would on a certain level, there's the kind of dichotomy or perception of body-mind is, especially in the English language, is really conditioned by Christianity, Christian ideas of there being a huge split and the body being carnal and pulling one down and the mind needing to be released so that it can rise up to the divine. And from a Buddhist perspective, and certainly Ajahn Chah, it's a lot more kind of maybe mundane or nitty-gritty in the sense of one is paying attention to both the, say, physical and mental conditions, so that one is saying, well, what is it that leads to well-being or wholesome qualities? And intrinsically, none of them are, you know, whether it's the body or the mind, they're not, say, intrinsically going to pull one down or lift one up. Anyway, it's how one directs attention and how the views and ways that one perceives that are going to create the difference. And oftentimes just using the examples of how we relate to the body or the mind, either in ways of desire or fear or worries, being Ajahn Chah would really hone in on that sometimes and really, you know, sometimes just make us look at it without having saying anything. It's just like, say, just a simple example of say, in a monastery like Ajahn Chah's, or most monasteries, but Ajahn Chah was kind of a master at it, where mealtime, everybody's hungry, we eat one meal a day, you're hungry, and you can't start eating until the senior monk starts eating. And then he starts, you know, engaging in conversation with the villagers and the lay people who come, and it's just this, hearing about people's buffaloes and their, you know, and their grandchildren, and it's sort of, the physical and mental state start to become apparent. So, but it's, and so that, but it was, you know, so you sort of see how that works. Or, you know, just as where he would, don't admonish anybody. Don't point out anybody's faults before the meal. So it's usually disaster. So it's these work together, so that if you've got an issue with somebody, wait until they've had their meal, they're happy, and then engage in it. These are simple things, but these are physical and mental states they flow back and forth. The last part of the question is can you tell us more about Ajahn Chah's biography and his example? And for example, when and how Ajahn Chah wanted to become a monk. We'll see what happens when I go to Thailand. I think the English biography of Ajahn Chah is very close to being completed. Ajahn Jayasaro was really keen to have it finished by the end of the rains retreat. And of course he didn't. He's a perfectionist. But I think he's getting very, very close. And Tankovilo from Abhayagiri has Ajahn Jayasaro invited him to come and spend the rains retreat nearby, and he's been working on the editing and being another eye on the... And he said there's still just a couple chapters that Ajahn Jayasaro is not quite happy with, but basically everything is together, it's in place, so it's getting close. The story that I say an example of Ajahn Chah and how he wanted to become a monk. Of course, northeast Thailand, there's a very, very strong Buddhist culture, and when you grow up in the culture, and it's just everywhere around you, and it's even in comparison to the other areas of Thailand, the regions of Thailand, northeast of Thailand is really the most, say, devout, tremendous faith, and so that's surrounded by Buddhism and people practicing, going to the temple. He probably started going to the temple when, shortly after he was born, and they started carrying him there. And then he'd go and go to the temple and help out in the monastery, and just be, because there's Buddhist monasteries. I think in Thai culture, the walls, either they're non-existent or they're incredibly permeable. It's just this flow back and forth between the lay world and the monastic world. And anyway, Ajahn Chah talks about his own inspiration for wanting to ordain. And he said as he was growing up, it's a farming village, and you have various chores and duties, which everybody does if you grow up in a village structure, in a family structure. Some things he wasn't really happy with. His parents having to go out and water the tobacco plants every day. And he said, I had to go and water those tobacco plants every day, and I didn't smoke. It was the adults who smoked, and I had to. And I didn't. So he had grumbled and complained about that, and seeing the onerous nature of being in the world and doing things that didn't make sense or didn't feel right, and then his sister talked about his decision to go to stay in the monastery. He said he'd been, his sister said, he'd been pounding rice, which you do on the, you have a long wooden pole, and you stand on one end and it goes up and pounds it. And he was supposed to be holding like a pestle. His sister said his heart wasn't in it, and he didn't want to be doing it. Something that he had some objection to, he wasn't paying attention, and the mortar came down snapped this piece of wood, came up, hit him, and it hurt. And he said, that's it. I'm going to the monastery. And he packed his stuff. And he was 9 years old. And that was his, he left home. He was done with the world.